So for a long time around here, we have liked to find on Miami streets, because Miami can be really rugged, some of the tougher guys that you will find on Miami streets, whether it is Kimbo Slice or Jorge Masvidal. Some of our fascination about these guys comes from the specifics of being from this region and knowing how tough it is to be the toughest guy in this region. And so Uli Diaz, you might not have heard of him, the Uli the Monster Diaz. I don't know why I called him Uli there. I don't know what they call you in Spanish. But Uli the Monster Diaz, he scored a knockout last week at Bare Knuckles Fighting Championship.
I just call him the Monster.
Yeah, the Monster would have been easier. Yep. That's probably what I should have done. Mm-hmm. And it happened in 3 seconds. And it was something that was pretty impressive. When you look at it. So Uli joins us now, and thank you for joining us. You want me to make it a hard U. Uli. I keep doing it. I'm sorry, Monster. I'm sorry I can't get your name right. It's a failure on my part. Please forgive me.
Do most people just call you Monster? I mean,
most people call me Monster. And thank you guys for this opportunity, man. It's awesome to be on this show with you guys.
Thank you. So what is your story? How is it you fought a lot as a kid? Like, what is it that made you somebody who wanted to be in fights?
As a kid, as long as I can remember, from kindergarten all the way up to today, I always got in fights. I was never a bully. I never picked on people, none like that. But I always felt like I was a protector of my friends. I always felt like I had this warrior spirit in me. So fighting got me in a lot of trouble as a kid. It got me kicked out of school. Fighting eventually got me sent to prison, you know, and while in prison, I fought there also. I came out, I did my amateur boxing career probably about 20 years ago. I got into MMA back in 2000, and I trained, but I had kids at a young age, so it was hard to train and fight amateurs and not get paid at all and try to support a family. So I stayed on the streets doing things I wasn't supposed to be doing and hanging around people I wasn't supposed to be around. And eventually, 4 years ago, I had this, what I like to call this come to God moment, where I was 35 years old. I was working out a little bit. I was living in Colorado at the time, and I was working out a little bit, training jiu-jitsu and a little bit of boxing. And I had this come to God moment. It's just this moment where I saw my life flash before my eyes, and I saw myself at 45 years old, and I'm like, man, what am I doing with my life? And I'd watch fights like a lot of people do on TV, and they say like, man, I gotta give this thing a try. And I moved back down to Miami immediately. I called the transport company, I got my car transported down here, bought a flight, got back down to Miami, started training at Fifth Street Gym on South Beach. And with an old coach of mine, his name was Josh. His name is Josh Dempsey. At the time, I was training with him, and so I was in there for a month. This was from November and December of 2016, right before New Year's. I told them, "Hey man, I'm ready to take a fight. You know, I got to take a fight. I got to do this." It started off. It was a bucket list thing. I was gonna get a couple pictures for Instagram. Say I did it for my kids. Get some pictures on my wall, and that's what the idea was at first. So January 27th of 2017, we flew to Dominican Republic. They got me an opponent. I was nervous. I didn't know if I was ready for this, you know. But I didn't tell anybody that at the moment. That was all inside feelings. And I fought. I knocked the guy out in the first round, and it was the biggest rush, biggest high, biggest drug I've ever, anything that I've done in my life. It couldn't top it. And I said I need to do this again, you know, and I just continued training. I finally really figured out what hard work was at the time. I thought I was working hard, doing things on the street, which was a big lie I was living. And I trained my ass off. And what you guys saw on Friday, those 3 seconds, was a lot of work put behind those 3 seconds. You know, it was a lot of sacrifice. A lot of eating right, a lot of sleeping, you know, a lot of not hanging with friends, a lot of missing out on things for those 3 seconds to come to light. And it's still amazing. My head's still spinning around that. It's still unbelievable to me.
That was a wandering path of wonderful storytelling that got us to where it is that we are right now with your story. Those 3 seconds I want to talk about, but you said a couple of things in there that I want to ask follow-ups on. One, you talked about fighting in prison. How much of that were you doing? And there has to be a good amount of fear involved, more fear than normal fights, no?
Yes and no, because, you know, on the streets, I tell people, when you're fighting on the streets, 99% of the fights on the streets are sucker punches. You know, you kind of get into an argument with somebody, you feel where you kind of see where this thing is going, and you either sucker punch them before they sucker punch you. You know, and that's not really a fight. That's nothing. And then in prison, it's not sucker punches. Now you got to set up a fight because you can't get caught by the correction officers in there, because then they're gonna put you in the box for fighting. So now you gotta, you get into an argument with a guy and be like, okay, I'll see you over here. You know where usually fights go down where people can't see them. And I had a couple fights like that, and that's where you kind of build this. where the butterflies start kind of going away, because now you're kind of put in a hard position. It's either fight or flight, and in prison there's really one choice. It's only fight or fight, because if you flight, then you're gonna have a rough time in there. You know, people are gonna see, you know, that you're running from things, and it's a different animal in there.
So explain to us, in terms of the prison experience, were you the guy that had to take care of things the first day in because of all of the movie cliches, you go find the biggest guy in the yard, all that stuff? Or, like, how did that work?
You know what? I went to prison at a young age, and when I first got in there, I did think it was like the movie cliche. You're kind of waiting for somebody to tell you something, and really it's not like that, you know. But eventually, you know, you're in there with a lot of people. There's a lot of animosity. A lot of people you're doing time with a lot of guys that, Everybody wakes up different at a different time, and you're surrounded by just, you know, by it's nothing but men. So you eventually fall into things if you're involved in any type of sports in the prison or anything like that, you fall into arguments. And again, you know, I was never one to back down. So, you know, you get into little arguments, and little things in there turn into huge things really fast, you know. And you never know what some guy's feeling. He might be arguing, he might be mad at his family about something, and you know, it gets taken out on you somehow. And it's like a lot of little weird situations in there that I found myself in a couple of them, and I found myself having to fight, you know, just to defend myself, or, you know, not to get not to feel, you know, quote unquote disrespected.
How long did it take for you to run that prison?
You know what? Within the first year, man, I was, and I'm not going to say running the prison. I'm not trying to be like,
you
make myself out to like, I was the biggest guy there or nothing, but you know, I get along with people. I'm easy to get along with, you know, a couple guys like everybody else in life, you know, that you're going to run into people that you disagree with. And, you know, I had a couple fights, but after that, it wasn't like it was, I had to watch my back the whole time. We fought, and after the fight, we'd be like, yo, you know, is this over? Yeah, we shake hands. All right, cool. And everybody went back, you know, their way.
What's the worst prison fight you were ever involved in? The most memorable one?
The most memorable one was, man, 2 weeks before I went home, I walked into the yard. I was, you know, I had been working out. I'm going home in about 2 weeks. I'm actually in a great mood. Everything's good. And me and this guy starts arguing with me about the weights, and I'm trying to avoid it, and he just keeps going, and man, it was, you know, we set up the fight right there in the yard in front of everybody. It got too far where we couldn't go anywhere to hide. It was like, all right, I had to go down right there at the moment. And I hit him with a left hook, man, and I knocked him out where he didn't fall back. He kind of sat on, he knocked out sitting on his, on like Indian style. It was weird. And but we didn't get caught for that fight, and I ended up going home 2 weeks later. It was great.
Well, help us understand something here. Again, Uli the Monster Diaz, 3 seconds. I didn't even know we were doing bare knuckle.
It's Uli, Dan.
Yeah. Bare knuckle.
It's Monster.
It's all right. Listen, I'm Cuban. Uli's fine.
Well, that's what I keep. That's a mistake I keep making, is that's the way I'm used to seeing it. But
yeah,
Uli is the way that we've got to go here. So Bare knuckle fighting. I didn't know we were doing that. And before I get too far, forgive my ignorance here, but I also be remiss if we're sitting here glorifying prison fights. I don't know why you were in prison. Was it also for fighting? How long were you in prison?
Good question.
Yeah. You're absolutely right. I'm not trying to brag about all these prison things, but I was in prison for 2.5 years. I went in at 23. I came out when I was right after my 25th birthday. I was in there for fighting on the streets. I had gotten jumped in Tallahassee. I had gotten jumped, and I ended up, you know, they sent me to the hospital. I sent two guys to the hospital with me, and that started my whole downward spiral of just, you know, sending me to prison for aggravated battery.
When you were saying that you were bad and on the wrong path and with the wrong people, were you simply a criminal?
I wouldn't consider myself that, but I was dabbling in criminal activity, I would say.
Okay. Well, is it from desperation? Like, what was happening in your life? Like, what is your backstory in terms of your ethnicity? Obviously, you're Cuban, but, like, what is your backstory on how your family got here? What level of desperation are we talking about from an early age?
Cuban, my family came over. My mother and father came over in 79 on freedom flights. I was born in 1981. Before I was born, my mother and father had already separated. My father was a political prisoner. He had left, you know, and so I was raised with a single mother. My mother is a great person. She's actually a pastor now, you know, but she did everything she could for me. But, as you know, being a single mom here from a new country, hardly speaking, not speaking any English, she had to go and work and do things. So I grew up, you know, mostly with my friends being my family, you know. So I grew up trying to figure things out, you know. No, I had never had a male role model in my life, never had a father, an uncle, a cousin, anybody to tell me anything to lead me in the right path. So I figured things out on my own. And, you know, growing up and in Miami, you know, it's easy to think that selling things that you're supposed to is cool. Doing things that you're not supposed to be doing is cool. And putting yourself in these positions, if nobody ever tells you that it's wrong to do it, then you just think that you're doing what you're supposed to be doing. And finally, as I started growing up and realizing things and figuring things out, and I have my own kids that I didn't want to go down the same path that I had. It might be late in life for some people, but I, at least it happened to me, you know what I mean? And I had that, you know, where I feel life slapped me across the face and was like, yo, are you this forever? Cause there's two avenues here, death and prison again. And I woke up out of that and I hate to sound cliche, but I really changed my life. You know, I really changed my life. I gave it all up. The money, the fastness and everything, and went through hard times even when I gave it up, because I was broke and I didn't know if this was going to work out for me, but I kept on this path and I kept on this path. And I have this little equation I like to tell people, that consistency over time equals success. And I'm not saying I'm successful. Not by far. I'm not there yet, but I'm on my way there, I feel.
Well, what happens with this particular fight? What kind of opportunities? Like I said, I didn't know we were bare knuckle fighting during a pandemic. This seems like a pretty terrible way to make a living, I guess, unless you're you, because it's just fighting other men for money seems crazy to me. Fighting other desperate people for money seems crazy to me. But your life has changed since this knockout in any way?
My life has those 3 seconds has changed my life completely. I'm on the Dan Le Batard show right now talking to you and Stu Gotch. I'm on every article from here to China and back. If you just Google my name, I pop up everywhere. I have the fastest knockout in combat sports history. I'm going down in the Guinness Book of World Records. I'm leaving my footprint in life where my kids could look up to me and I could be somebody's hero. You know, and I'm not trying to boast or brag or anything like this, but I'm helping people without even knowing that I'm helping them. You know, the people are looking and saying, man, this guy changed his life. What is stopping me from doing this right now? You know what I mean? Maybe not fighting, but just picking something and going to do it, you know? And so, yes, to answer your question, yes, this has really changed my life. This has given me a great, great opportunity, and opportunities and doors are opening for me right now.
You are you're ripped, you're jacked, you're in phenomenal shape. You look good. I'm checking out all these images on the internet. You also have a Sebastian the Ibis tattoo on your arm, which begs the what's that?
Are you hitting on me right now?
I'm not. Just listen.
It felt like it. It felt like it.
For one second, I'd like to look the way you look. Just for one second of my life, I'd like to look the way you look and be in the type of shape you're in.
It felt like you were flirting with him. You want to ask your question again?
Yeah, what I don't want is Sebastian the Ibis. I don't want that tattoo on my arm, but you have one on your arm, which begs the question, are the Canes back?
I listen, I love the Canes. I love all Miami teams, but I'm a diehard Hurricanes fan, bro. You know, and I love that's why I got them tatted many years ago, man. I'm a diehard UM fan.
Billy, you must have so much to talk to Yuli about, given that he was a bodyguard for Pitbull, right? Like,
no way.
Well, yes. More than that. Pitbull is a brother to me. I grew up with him since I met him when we were in seventh grade in middle school, and from that moment until today, we're brothers. He's still by my side. I'm actually doing his podcast this afternoon. One of the biggest inspirations in my life. And I did, when I came out of prison, I did bodyguarding for him for many years, went around. I like to tell people I went from prison to private jets. You know, life has been amazing.
It seems like it's more than just bodyguard though, him, because you're there on a boat with him, with DJ Khaled, Mark Anthony, Luis Fonsi, Brito. How is this your life now?
A couple years ago, that picture. And, my life has always been like that with him. He took me to go meet. I've met Tony Robbins. When I met Tony Robbins, I met him backstage. He signed my book, made it out to me, and sent me on a 4-day trip to New Jersey. I was with Bon Jovi and I'm one of these guys that sometimes I float out of my body and I'm looking down on myself, and these things are incredible with what's happening, man. It's really, I like to say, it's a blessing, man.
Yuli, you know what I'm thinking? A lot of people are talking about you right now because of the 3-second knockout, right? And it's going to be hard to beat a 3-second knockout. So I think for the next fight, we need to get, I don't know why I'm saying we, like I'm part of your crew now, but I feel like we need to get you like some marquee person, not necessarily like a good fighter, but I don't know if you've seen this, Jake Paul is fighting people now. Maybe you fight like a Jake Paul, or if things go well for Tyson, you could fight Tyson after his fight on Thanksgiving. Because I mean, look, you're 38. Tyson's in his 50s, right? I feel like you have a shot with Tyson.
Man, listen, that would be a dream come true. Talking about Jake Paul, I was Logan Paul's sparring partner when he did his last boxing match last year. I was at his house with Shannon Briggs and all them. They flew me out there to be a sparring partner. That'd be an amazing moment. But right now, what I have my eyes on is Thiago Alves. You know, I respectfully called him out. I was a fan of his when he was in UFC. You know, the guy's a great fighter. He fights for bare knuckle also right now, and I think that me and him for a title fight at light heavyweight sometime now in 2021 would be the show, you know?
Pitbull.
Yeah, the other Pitbull. Yep.
The other Pitbull.
The other one.
The lesser Pitbull.
I'm feeling like I feel like maybe we'll talk to you tomorrow with Pitbull. What do you think?
What are you doing?
Wait, with Thiago?
Yeah.
No, hold on. Just back off. No, Stugatz is getting too aggressive. He's flirting with you, and then he wants to get straight to the f***ing. That's how it works with Stugatz. He goes from flirting to just going like, hey, can you get me Pitbull? So we'll come back on that in a second.
He didn't even take me on a date.
I want to talk to you a little more, though, about these experiences where you end up in these situations. Do you call Pitbull Pitbull, or do you call him Armando?
I call him my brother. Oh, man. I call him my brother, yeah.
But just my brother every time? It's not like you don't refer
to... Hey, my brother, how you doing? Hey, my brother, what's going on today? Like, that's basically my name for him.
You're my brother.
How does it work? How does it work with the meeting of Tony Robbins? Like when you end up in all of these situations here, you're saying it's surreal. But do you have one that you recall among all others?
Well, that one to me was the most surreal one. I'll tell you why. So I found out that Pitt was doing something with Tony Robbins. So I called him. I told him, hey, you doing this for Tony Robbins? Yeah. I go, listen, I love that guy. You know, you mind if I go with you? He's like, no, let's go. So I jumped on a jet with him. We went to Detroit. He did a show. Right after the show, we jumped on a jet and went to Atlanta. The next day, he had Tony Robbins. So the next day, I used to carry a Tony Robbins book. It's called Awaken the Giant Within. I used to carry it on me at all times. So I show up to the green room in the back, and I have Tony Robbins' book in my hand. You know, I'm dressed nice, got a suit on. And Pitt's like, hey, so, and this is another thing. Pitt has never before and never, ever done this in his life. So until this moment, to this day. So I get backstage and I got to the green room and I got the Tony Robbins book. And he goes, what is that? I go, no, it's Tony Robbins' book, but I take it with me everywhere. He, you know, and this is kind of at the beginning of my career. I go, he inspires me. Well, this guy, you know, he motivates me. Like, you know, I there's certain things I could take from what he says and I kind of use them just to get me through the day. He's like, hey, look, I'm going to make him sign the book for you and we'll take a picture with him. I'm like, dude, he's never done that. You know, Pitt never says that. I'm like, oh, damn, that's amazing. So now we go backstage. Tony Robbins is still on stage. Me and Pitt are backstage. I'm sitting in a corner in a chair, probably 20 feet from where Pitt is. He's, you know, he's got people around him talking to him and stuff. I'm sitting by myself. Tony Robbins comes out and there's this tiny trampoline. You know, those little tiny ones. He comes off stage and Tony Robbins is like kind of jumping on the trampoline, I guess, because blood flowing and shit. Yeah. I swear to God. So listen. So Pitt tells me, he's like, Yuli. He's looking around. He don't see me sitting down. So I kind of jump up and I run over. He's like, hey, look, Tony, this is my brother. You know, he carries your book around. He says you're an inspiration to him. You mind signing this book? He's like, no problem. He grabs my book. I have it right here next to me. You know, he says, you know, something to the effect of follow your dreams, signs of Tony Robbins. He tells me, hold on. He calls some lady over and tells him, hey, come over here. Hey, get his email, talking to me. Get his email. I want you to be a special guest of mine at this UBT. I'm throwing my first event in an arena. It was where the New Jersey Devils play. It was 15,000 people at this arena. And he goes, I want you to be my special guest. I'm like, all right. So they get my email. And she goes her way, you know. And Pitt goes and does what he needs to do with Tony Robbins. And we go home. So I think to myself, I'm like, bro, that was amazing. But I'm like, man, they're going to forget about me. This guy's too busy. 3 days later, I get an email. They got me a hotel room. They got me the tickets to this thing. First time he does an event, 15,000 people. I'm sitting up front where my seat has to cost at least $50,000. I'm sitting with this guy who used to be an assistant coach for the Heat. I got Kevin Durant's mom right next to him, Dr. Daniel Amen, which is a huge neurosurgeon from around the world. I have Bon Jovi sitting behind me, M. Night Shyamalan. I'm like, listen, I'm like, who am I right now? They're like, who is this?
I got so many.
Who's the assistant coach?
Ron Rothstein. I got to get to this. A number of follow-ups I have. Was Tony Robbins on the tiny trampoline the entire time you were talking to him? He was just jumping up and down?
No. He had gone off. He had gone off the trampoline to come talk to me. Yeah.
All right. Who was the Heat assistant coach?
The Heat assistant coach is, I forgot his name. He wore glasses. He's kind of, you know, light-skinned black dude.
David Fizdale.
Fizdale. It was Fizdale. Yes.
Thank you.
Good job, Chris.
So listen to this. The first night of this thing, when the first night ends, we go outside and Tony Robbins makes us walk about 10 yards of hot, burning red coal. Fire coal, and it's Bon Jovi, me, and Tony Robbins are the first people to walk together on the hot coal together, and it was amazing.
Who screamed the loudest? I mean, honestly,
no screaming. No screaming.
Oh, get the hell out of here! Hot coal.
No screaming. What did anyone scream?
Nobody screamed. Everybody. He makes you do this. He makes you say this. You know, he makes you pat your chest and like, you know, say this certain thing that he tells you to say, like that your mind is more powerful than whatever. You know, take off your shoes, you're in your socks. There's people waiting with water hoses and stuff. And you walk across this hot coal real quick and you know, you overcame a certain thing, you know. He makes you feel like you overcame something. And that's the first night.
Billy, I think now that we can no longer have a relationship with Masvidal, I think you need to become part of Yuli's entourage. I think that you, because he's very Miami. He is unusually Miami. You can hear it in his speech patterns. You can hear it in his story.
Just stay away from QAnon.
Yes, we should probably ask about the political beliefs on the front end here. We're getting a little deep in this.
Yuli, what's White Boy been up to? I see you're friends with White Boy.
White boy with the dreadlocks, you mean, right?
Yeah, that's from I Love New York.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I love New York. He's a brother to me too. I was on the Cashstone Pond with him. I know White Boy for over 20 years. He's also like family to me. He's been one of my biggest motivators and you know supporters, and he's doing great right now. I mean, you know, he's just laying back trying to make things happen. He was actually at my bare knuckle fight. He's doing some photography on the side, so he took a bunch of badass pictures of me that night.
Billy, do we have any Miami Cuban questions that we want to ask him? Like best black beans in South Florida, like to see how Cuban he actually is. Do you want to grill him on these subjects?
Well, no, I don't want to grill him. I was just heartbroken when Yuli said that he's eating healthy now, because now he's probably not doing the pastelitos and the croquetas and none of that stuff.
I still throw him in here and there, you know what I mean? Like Isla Canaria got some fire croquetas, Sergio too, you know? Got to give a shout out to the Miami people. And pastelitos, man, I'm a Carlos Bakery guy, man. Carlos Bakery is fire to me.
All right. And what region from Miami is your favorite?
What region? I'm from South Miami, man. I'm from 67th Avenue, Southwest Burr Road. That's where I grew up, on 67th Avenue, and that's, you know, that's my stomping ground, South Miami area, South Miami, West Miami area.
Go Cobras.
Thank you. Yes, thank you, Yuli. We appreciate your time. It was nice meeting you. Congratulations on your success. Hopefully you could parlay it into a lot more, and congratulations on changing your life.
Dan, Billy, Stu Gotch, thank you so much, man. I truly appreciate this interview, man. You guys are amazing. I'm a huge fan of you guys. Stu Gotch, no, I don't like guys, bro. No dates for you, brother.
Okay, but no, I'm thinking a second date tomorrow. And here's what I'm thinking: you come back on the show and you bring friends. So it is me, Dan, Billy, you, and Pitbull. Like, you're going to be on the podcast today. Say, Pit, hey, I need to go on the Levitard show again. Okay, this is my moment to shine. They want you to join me, talk about our friendship, our relationship, and we talk to you again tomorrow morning, same time. How about that?
You know what? I'll run it by him today. Let me see what he says.
That a boy.
I would love to do it. Sure.
All right. And maybe, listen, maybe on stupidity, a little home and home for me and Pitt.
Come on,
you know?
Come on, get out of here. Yuli, thank you.
Just Pitt, though, okay?
Hey, thank you, guys. Thank you, guys. Have a great day, man.
All right. See you later.
Thank you, man.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.